Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show right here on talk808.com. Thank you for joining me and I appreciate you listening in and your phone calls earlier this week. And as usual, if you know anything about this show, it's we don't hold back, and sometimes people are offended. And I often say, I equate that to being, you're really not offended, you're misinformed. And boy, does that present a number of issues when you're misinformed, and then that information that you do receive is delivered to you by the government or indirectly as the government agencies using conduits such as contractors and people that have built an interest so that they can get their teeth into the public funds and what have you, and all presenting themselves as if it is official government work. And a lot of it is good work, but there is a lot of it that, especially in the state of Hawaii here, what I have witnessed over the 30 years that I've been here. And that is what, I don't know if it's corruption or people just simply taking advantage of an innocent situation where money is there. We have these needs and we have scientific research and we have this just the daily function of government here for the betterment of all people, and try to strike a balance in managing the resources, the natural resources, which is water, clean air, clean water, clean land, and what have you, and the right to a decent living. But what we have right now, we're witnessing, is a TMT. Now, I am not going to claim that I know much or anything about the cultural claims or the interests or the concerns or the degradation that is the offensive behavior that the Hawaiian community describes, because I don't know all the details, but I do know right from wrong. And what I see right now, is a right and wrong situation. Who's right? The Hawaiian community is right. Why? Because this is an agency, and I want to break it down for you, that just say that it reeks of corruption, it reeks of disrespect, it reeks of people lining their pockets and funding and doing things that were really shouldn't be allowed. So the UH, as we discussed last week, has a lease, 1968 lease, for the land that they occupy on Mauna Kea now. That land is under lease to the University of Hawaii, stating only one observatory, not 10, not 3, not 13, and not the TMT 30 millimeter. Doesn't speak to that. Never did. And so I hope you follow me on this. It's going to be scattered, but it is so corrupt and so it's as if the governor wants something done to make himself look good, but then is there friends in the background that's going to benefit financially from having these contracts, that's going to have to lay the cement, going to have to do the engineering work, going to have to, we don't know. But the DLNR is responsible for protecting the land and the flora and the fauna. And this land, and the DLNR is the Hawaii State Department of Land and Natural Resources, and housed under there is the office of various offices that would be issuing permits or looking at conditional use permits and issuing those offices of OCCL. land division. So they're broken down. So University of Hawaii partners with somehow, and it seems that it gets what it wants with little scrutiny. Now, there's a lot of paperwork generated back and forth, but at the end results, the end of the day, they get what they want. And to add insult to injury, the Mauna Kea, the presence of the community, the Hawaiian community, and others, I went over and visited for 3 days and wanted to become informed as to what was going on. And I applaud the Hawaiian community because my expertise and background and knowledge and experience with the way the state of Hawaii handles matters and even the federal government handles matters, they put themselves first and their interests and the special interests first, people third, or maybe fifth, or they don't give a damn, the way I've seen it unfold. So I applaud the Hawaiian community for those people, men and women, and the kupuna that decided to take a stance. And that stance is, I admire them because they're within the community. Not all of them are supporting this movement. And I'm very careful to call it or assign a name to it because I don't know if it's a movement, an occupation. But I think that what I'm gaining from it, or getting from it, is an education. And this is culminating from the corruption. UH has its fingers in every piece of pie that comes across a state agency, either under the RCUH or contracts, and it's competing, and it conceals documents and what have you. As you may recall, the Richardson School of Law is a great university, a great thing that's in place there, and a lot of good people have come out of there. But they engage in a practice where discussing, and you can find these emails on carolcox.com that talk about an academy and the acquisition of monies and how to avoid or circumvent getting a contract signed to a person that was a friend of Robert Farrell, the chief of law enforcement of DOCARE, who started an academy, brought in other people from out of state. Now, the academy is not certified, but they're going to spend money anyway when, in fact, they could have written a formal agreement with the Honolulu Police Department or come up with something better and then paid these entities to train new officers, and they would be post-certified. As it stands right now, the officers at DLNR, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, are not post-certified or any standardization. One might show up with pink leotards on, and the other may have green leotards, and the other may have pink and with a ribbon in his hair. That would be the official uniform. There's no continuity. There, for example, right now, they're just in between getting a California type uniform, beige shirt and green pants, but right now they were out there wearing blue and green coats, and you know, just no continuity, no consistency. So, and that speaks to the corruption. Because if you're dealing with the Constitution of these United States, and pardon me, some may differ and say that this is not the United States, but I'm an American citizen. I'm here to say from my point, this is still America until that declaration and the independence that I know. And I'm hoping that one day they get recognition and get their country back and we quit meddling in their affairs. So I don't want to be disrespectful and misspeak, and you call me up and tell me, well, no, this, the discussion has been had, and we've served it over and over. But the bigger point is the DLNR is right now presently parked with several cars. The DOCARE, I should call it. It's a DLNR, I told you, Department of Land and Natural Resources. But DOCARE, Department of Conservation Resource Enforcement, they are the uniform officers carrying guns and badges, can arrest you, issue you citations, make your life miserable, all because Suzanne Case has a burr up her coat, and she wants to do it on behalf of her friends who's given big donations and what have you. But God forbid if there was a guy out laying a net in the and in prohibited areas, catching fish out of season, and it didn't matter. It's illegal to catch them anyway with certain type of nets. But you can't get an officer to come because she doesn't see fit or see that it's important enough to put the resources in front. A manini is just that. It's a manini. And but in the meantime, she has no problem, and nor does the governor have any problem as serving, letting the officers serve as bodyguards and thugs and whatever you want to call it. And that's what they are putting these officers in, exposing them to this kind of behavior. Because if UH has a lease and it subleases to an entity, they still have to comply with the land use agreement and the conditions of the CDUA. And who enforces those conditions? The DLNR conservation officer. Ultimately, when there, you take a legal action, file an action, make an arrest against or investigate the sub-lessee or the leasee, the master lessee, then it's DLNR. So why on earth is the DLNR's DOCARE officer standing there playing security cop for UH? And that's what it is, because the people there that are gathering to express themselves in opposition to the Mauna Kea proposal, if they were violating the law, take the necessary actions that is appropriate. But to have officers standing around, and these are peaceful efforts, people just singing, chanting hula, and just doing what, and it's making their statement, saying this is what we want change. We won't, don't want what has been going on to continue. And in doing so, you have officers carrying Glocks. I guess they're carrying Glocks. They may have graduated to some fully automatic weapon with When Farrell was here, it was going to be making them the biggest, baddest, meanest mother muckers that you've ever seen in your life. And they were just going to be protecting the trees and the fish and the flowers and the Ivy Kupuna. But no, now it comes to realization, reality, and exposes itself that what it is, you know, if a person is out violating the law and cutting down a core tree, you would naturally need a sound device to scare them off, scare the people off, or hurt their ears. The LRAD, you wouldn't need that. You really wouldn't need a bulletproof vest if you were just going up to tell a person, hey, you know, you've encroached on the land here, and what you've done is in violation of the conditional use permit that you have, and so we're going to issue a citation, and you know the necessary steps, and you can go before the board of land. That's the way it is. But what I witness, and these officers are drawing $2,000 a day plus some, with free food, free cots, free sleep, and to just stand around with their thumbs up their ass. just standing around, doing nothing, waiting for what? Intimidating the people that are gathering there peacefully? When there are violations occurring as we speak and sleep? So, take a step back and look at the overall picture, the bigger picture. I believe that the Department of Land and Natural Resources is unlawfully and unethically using its officers to serve as bodyguards to protect a road while the people agreed to let the road be open to and people transport and transfer themselves up and down the mountain that work for the company. So why do you need an army of DLNR guys? And if you were to take a look at, and I would encourage, let's see the historical background of many of these officers that are standing there. They're happy, and I know some of them, and some of them are just as great as cotton candy, good folks. But at some point, you know, where the confusion comes is that I'm told when they originally were told that they were going to be dispatched from this island and other islands, many of them balked at it and said, no, I'm not going to go. Then they took most of the supervisors from Honolulu and added them to the cadre of officers on the Big Island. And they were going to just be there for a week and they would rotate. But the money was so good, folks, that they were sent back home and says, we're going to stay another week. We ain't no rush, no hurry, man, no hurry. I mean, if I can stand around intimidating the native people, making it look as if all of a sudden it's going to be a breakout and these native people going to stop being kind all of a sudden in an instant, and the kupuna is going to just turn and become mad dogs and venomous snakes and biting and slashing and doing all those things. That was nowhere to be found, nowhere to be seen. You can't even find a piece of paper on the ground over there. That's how well organized the people are. And you would be impressed. So this whole effort, it's a corrupt effort. And I want to speak to one little thing. There, I was listening to a number of the conversations and talks and what have you while there. And a couple things came up. Well, they are polluting the area up there, and they're allowing tests and that has nothing to do with astronomy or observatories, So, you know the way I operate. I want to have a document to support such claims. Not that I doubted the people, because I know it to be true. And we're going to be able to disclose to you later on some more substantial historical activities that will say you might want to apologize to the people that were sponsoring this or putting this together and say, you know what? You are right. The DLNR and all of the UH and the sublessees appear to be behaving in a clandestine way to conceal and get what they want and ignoring the. So something as manini as this now, don't bother to write me and tell me that, well, that's a little thing. I look at the cumulative effects and how they all add up, piece here, piece there, piece there. Then eventually you got nothing left. So in 2016, now this is speaking to some of the concerns that I had heard that they were saying that, you know, they're allowing tests to go on up there and they're not thinking about the watershed. This is a forest reserve. Why call it a forest reserve if you're going to allow any kind of industrial tests and on and on and on and on. So, and I agree with them and start to ask questions. So what we found in the files at the Department of Land and Natural Resources Land Division, a letter dated from the Office of Mauna Kea Management, May 31, 2016. Now, this is speaking to the claims that by the native community that tests and things are going on up there that should not be going on up there, period. No matter what they were, they weren't trying to figure out, give approval or disapproval. They were just saying they're operating outside of the scope of their license, a lease, and the intent was to house telescopes or observatories. So the subject is, this is to Sam Limo, Administrator, Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands. And by the way, if you don't know where to go and you're not in a court case and you want these documents, go to the DLNR on the first floor, Kalani Moku building, and go down and ask, as right there across from the chairman's office. You want to go to the Office of Conservation Council, Coastal Lands, Conservation and Coastal Lands, and just tell them you want a copy of the applications and the permits that they issued to TMT and to UH, and that's where you can find it. It's a treasure trove. So, but back here, I wanted to find just one, and there's many, and I'll enumerate or lay them out for you, but this one caught my eye. This is a letter written on May 31st, 2016, and it says the subject, submission of site plan approval or application to temporarily install test tubes at the catwalk of the Subaru Telescope facility. The project request, Subaru Telescope is requesting temporarily install a plastic tray holding sealed test tubes with the 1% solution of PBNs that would be secured to the Subaru Telescope catwalk. The catwalk is off the ground and only accessible to authorized persons. The trays, taking approximately 1 square foot of space, will be in place for 100 days, then removed for analysis. The purpose and benefit of this. The purpose of this request is part of a worldwide environmental science study of ultraviolet or UV solar radiation effects on polybrominated naphthalenes, PBNs. PBNs are a commonly used fire retardant, are being examined as an analog to polychlorinated naphthalene, or PCNs. PCNs were used widely in the past, but are now highly regulated, bioaccumulate, and little is known about their breakdown in the natural environment. PBNs, the proxy subject substance, are not regulated. The solution is safe to handle with simple gloves and poses no known environmental threat. Nonetheless, the solution will only be used in sealed test tubes. Hey, that sound about as innocuous and innocent as anything. But again, what does that have to do with testing for PCBs, PCNs, and PBCs? What does that have to do with anything with astronomy, astrology? So, could they have done that test somewhere else? Now, there are other tests and other things that I'm going to be disclosing later, but I just wanted to lay that out. And yes, it is true that University of Hawaii and Sublacy's are out actually operating outside the intended scope of this. And the problem is that the Department of Land and Natural Resources have orchestrated this where and allowed this matter should, no matter how small it is, it should go to the land board. But this is one of those situations where greasing the skids, bringing in something like this, you're allowing, oh, well, we can approve that ourselves, and we don't really need to go before the land board. Yet this is a reserve, and there's a guarantee that this, everything's going to be protected. So give you an example why it's going to lay there 100 days, this PCB, PBNs and what have you, testing. And some of the, one at least of the observatories were complaining and need to modify the security because people were climbing on top of the observatory. Now, what if you're leaving 100 test tubes for 100 days with contaminated materials in them as part of a test? How are you exposing the public? Now, again, that's what they were doing. Now, the telescopes and the observatories have paint on them. I suspect the paint, and I'm still looking for documents that exist. There are paints with anti-fouling agents because the freezing weather, the rain, the all of that, and I'll read some of this to you, why if you are going to build a telescope, you should be, and you have a certain time to do it and you want to accomplish your goal. The DLNR stands back and allow these defunct on non-functioning observatories to just sit there now when they should have been removed. So as they sit there, the paint, the weather, the rain, the hydraulic plucking, the freezing, the hydraulic thawing, and what have you. So as the water gets paint behind it, the paint gets water behind it and fills in the micropores, it freezes. And if you know anything about Mauna Kea, it's subject to freezing half the year, at least, at minimum half the year. So that's pushing the paint and causing the flaking. And what anti-fouling agents are being introduced to the environment at that elevation? There's a concern for water table in that area and the impacts these things have on water table. So you get the feeling and see why I say what I say about the nature of the relationships and the corruption, because you're not giving, the fox is not giving the keys to the hen house. The fox is residing in the hen house and inviting his friends in the hen house, and they're just having a hell of a good time at our expense. And all under the name of science. But sometimes, what is science? Sometimes science is also just a study of something, the observation of something. No, there's always something to come, an element that was overlooked or unknown, and then you discover it later. But the telescopes is really giving the people of the state of Hawaii and the United States an opportunity to see corruption at its worst. There is no way, absolutely no way, that the UH could have signed a lease in 1968 for one telescope and then allow it to blossom into 13 or more and then still wanting to put more telescopes up there while the contract of the lease, which is binding, contractual, says only an observatory. No modification of that permit. So everything up there, and I know the legal minds might say, well, yeah, but, and I say, yeah, my but, because it's a document is a document, a legal document is a legal document. There's nowhere as recent as last week, I call and ask the DLNR Land Division chief and ask him, has there been an official modification of the original lease? And I was told, no, it has not been. It should be to address that. But then the parties, I'm informed by others that if there's these leases or this lease occurred, the parties that agreed must agree to modify with their signature. So if the land board agreed to the original permit or lease, then they have a voice and should be considered and allowed to make comment or make modification through their vote. So there are factors of intimidation. You put the cops out there, you put the police out there, you put the DLNR officers out there at $2,000 an hour or day, and then you do things like this. Now, I've gone in and pulled the files up and under the Uniform Information Practices Act. You too are entitled to that. That's your right to ask any government agency for documents and records that you want. And don't be intimidated. Then if they shoot you in the head, you wouldn't know the difference anyway. Just exercise your rights and you'll meet some resistance in some places. But you as a citizen have a right to write your Office of the Land and Natural Resources or go in there during normal operating hours and make your verbal request. The state law actually is that all you have to do is make a verbal request. You don't have to go through the paperwork, but they seem to want to put a layer of obstruction in the path of you, but it's okay. But this UIPA, and I'm telling you this for you new listeners, if it's Mount Akea and you want to know about a specific activity at Mount Akea, then about that permit, you go to the coastal, the office that I just mentioned to you, the OCCL, and file a request that you would like to see these records from this date to this date or whatever you define that your interest. And they have an obligation, legal obligation. No matter how big and bad they are with their officers standing out there wrongfully being used and deployed, you still have a right to exercise your rights to make that request. So you make the request and you just ask for what it is you want. And you get several choices. You can either say that you want to view them there at the facility. You want to make copies. You'll pay for the copies. You can ask for a waiver. If you can then justify, always put in there, if you make a request, you want a waiver of the fees. And these fees, now that doesn't mean you're going to be guaranteed to get them, but you demonstrate your request for waiver by saying you're going to use this information to substantially educate yourself and the public about government functions. Don't be intimidated. This is the year 2019. I think we've digested enough bull from bad government. And I think that it's time for everybody to stand up and demand that they be treated respectfully, be treated right. And that's why I'm impressed with the Mount Akea efforts there by the community. You and I know if we're true to ourselves and we're good human beings, you and I know that they've screwed the Hawaii in so many ways that it doesn't fit well now. And things will have to change. Now, I know I could have said that a little more eloquent, and I know I'm having kids and older people listening, but you know, at sometimes you have to call it what it is. And what I saw up on that mountain the other day, those 3 days, was enough rewarding to me to come back and seek more truth and then disseminate that truth to say to you, not muddle not sending you a message of, well, I got to be careful. Because if you speak the truth, it doesn't matter. You can meet with hardship anyway. If you speak the truth or you tell a lie, both cost the same thing. Cost you your integrity. You speak the truth, you build your integrity. You speak the lie, you destroy it. So, and then the key is, don't make it about you. Now, when I saw that, now, I know also that I've read that there was some large amount of fire retardant materials to spill at that facility in the park reserve. And so when I see this study being proposed and asking permission to do this study outside of the purview of astronomy, then I'm saying, well, you have spill, and it was just treated as if it was just another someone spilled cooking baking powder. That's the way I took it. Oh, we cleaned it up and all, but the reality is they spill a chemical that now is they're also trying to do a study on. So now, just a little bit about their writing. This is their writing about Mauna Kea, and so geology, climate, and hazards. Mauna Kea is considered an active post-shield phase volcano. That's according to the USGS. Climate conditions at this altitude, 12,500 and above, are often below freezing, and when combined with precipitation or high humidity, often very localized phenomena, ice can form on cinder surfaces, resulting in natural cinder movement from geophysical process and form rime ice on infrastructure. Temperature at site averages 40 degrees Fahrenheit and winds at 30 to 40 miles per hour. High elevation, 13,400 feet elevation. The flora, no vegetation, flora, fauna, or water resources are in the proposed project area. It is currently being used as an astronomical observatory and for vehicle parking and occasional vehicle movement. The Office of Mauna Kea Management currently monitors the site for native and invasive species. So, anyway, you have this kind of activity going on up there, and the files are humongous. And we know that I don't want to make a claim that this is lead paint, but I suspect that they didn't just use your base paint up at that high elevation with these elements impacting and influencing daily, hourly, minute by the minute. I suspect that all of this metal that is up there, the paint might be flaking. You can see some of the photographs that we recovered talk about the paint chipping and flaking off of the, for example, the... This was regarding the project that I just read from. Repair exterior facade and dome of the 2.2-meter UH-88-inch telescope. And structures and land use existing. Minor alteration existing structures. Standardization of metal sidings. Texture relocation. pH structures and land use existing, minor repair, maintenance, and operations, general repairing. So anyway, what it also says is that I like this, but it catches me off guard here. The project will bring the facility exterior up to contemporary, well-maintained facility standards. How about that? The project will bring the facility exterior up to contemporary, well-maintained facility standard. Does that mean they're acknowledging that it's not been maintained, the upkeep? So the big question I have they overextended themselves out of greed? Have they? Did they just see an abundance of opportunity to make more money by inviting different observatories and people of interest that had interest in setting up observatories and telescopes? Was it a free fall? And in doing so, are we dealing with the results of a chaotic, uncontrolled expansion that should never have happened? And so I suspect it is true that it's out of control. It got out of control. They never had any intentions. That's why I drew the conclusion that there's corruption at UH and DH, DLNR. Because DLNR has an obligation to enforce and protect the Palila, the historical sites, and all of those things. And yet they have their officers standing there serving as security guards and bodyguards for the governor. Now, I know you're going to argue and go, well, yeah, that's right. But these people weren't behaving in a way that they were threatening anyone. The Native community that put this together. So the sheriff protects the governor when that's who escort him and drive him around. And if you go over to Washington Place, you see the sheriff. But you go to where there's cover up and corruption and the lack of enforcement on the sublessees and the leasees, then if you were to speak out and object, you get the cops sicked on you in the form of a uniform conservation officers. And I regret seeing them there because it suggests that if these guys will sell their souls for $2,000 a day, then there's a potential for having violence initiated on their part, because they're a group of people that can't say no when it becomes right and wrong. And I know what you're going to say, but when you're in those situations, you've got to follow orders. Not really. At some point, you have legal advantage in that you can't be compelled to do something that is illegal. You have a union that should have assessed this. What are you being exposed to? Why don't you man up and go and knock on the door and say, union, tell us, review this, because I don't want to be called and snagged into a legal fight. But what this tells you is that the way they're using and incorporating the DLNR officers suggests to me, in my background and my understanding of corruption, is that all parts of this is compromised. There's not one individual can say no, because if the UH intended to operate this way, all it took was to stop it was to DLNR to say, no, you only allow one observatory. Well, it's in the interest of science. So what? This is in the interest of law. You go in and change the conditions of your lease, and you negotiate and you modify. And you have, see, and we're not just dealing with a group of people. Suzanne Case is an attorney. At her disposal, that sits in every meeting, is the attorney general's deputy advising her along the way. UH has an attorney general that operates and advises. So how is it that we could have all of this pilikia or trashy behavior when you have experts there advising? But what you see is that anybody that potentially stands to, like the public, stands to expose some of this, then you threaten them by presenting them with a nice gift and a visual gift of cops with guns and stun guns and brass knuckles. You understand? So I taped a talk by a young man, and I've met him on a couple of occasions, but and was impressed with him. His name is Joshua Lanakila McGill. I'm at 10 o'clock hour, we're going to play this. And don't be frightened. It's not, he's not a Black Panther or whatever, you know, if you're inclined to or anxious to get a reason not to support. I think if you listen to him, he summed up many of the things that are present and that are obvious to us. But they go unspoken. The dots are not connected unless you're in academia. So 10 o'clock on this station, talk808.com, you'll be able to listen to him. But Dillon's presence there on the highway is a sad sight, because there were no hunters taking anything. There were no people polluting the water on the part of the native community, the Kanaka Maoli. There were no violations. And if there were, why didn't they take action? So what I witnessed was guys strong-arming, putting the officers with the guns and badges in the trucks parked in a uniform fashion and what have you, and right down maybe less than 100 yards is there's hula and spiritual uplifting and people being positive and thinking about their culture and exercising their rights, and just look, glance to the left, there's a bunch of goons. The goon squad standing there waiting for the orders of some person that's just have already screwed up and screwed people out of everything. They're just waiting for them to call up and say, okay, go get them, boys. Get in there and mix it up. Arrest some of those people. Now, if you think I'm exaggerating or just reading into what I see from my own standpoint, no, that's how things get out of control. There should, in my opinion, and I have a law enforcement background, I didn't see a single act there that would warrant a cadre, an army of conservation officers drawing more than $2,000 a day in salary. It was merely to intimidate, because the violations that were you're supposed to be enforcing conservation laws. Who's going to investigate the Subaru people? Who's going to investigate the U.S. Air Force if they spill and dump or knowingly, intentionally commit some acts that's illegal? Who is going to enforce it if they discharge wastewater instead of taking it and discharging it as they are told to do or legally prescribed and operate outside of that? Who's going to do it? DLNR, are they that ethical that, well, we can balance this? You know, if we catch the public violating, we're going to give them a citation or arrest them. And if we catch the other folks violating, the permittees up on the hill, we're going to arrest them. No. It's not going to happen. So it's very sad to see our government functioning this way. It really is, because if there was unruliness and the behavior, I think that just taking the palila, the bird, the endangered species that is found on those slopes, that in itself warrants a more aggressive approach, more attentive coverage of the Lisi UH, because just because they're UH, you know, education is one thing, but ethics is another. You can educate people, but ethically you could be just corrupt because of the money. It's Lyric. So UH manages, has the lease. Then there's the Mauna Kea, Office of Mauna Kea Management. Everything's Lyric. Good, and, you know, it's as though money comes to town and the first one to grab it is UH. Competing, and I believe over the years I've filed complaints and raised these issues with UH's methods of operation. They compete with other people that have the ability to do the jobs and the contracting, but they don't. They funnel these contracts to special interests, DLNR and UH. So it's not about the resources up there where DLNR is. It's about controlling the people. And I think if we had a chance or have a chance to set this train back on the tracks right, the Mauna Kea gathering, the Mauna Kea effort that is being witnessed there up there that the Native people are putting forward, advancing, it would be a hellhole if, because what I'm hearing on the street, the educated folks that are from the mainland, are the Haoles, and I include myself in that, we're asleep at the wheel. We're not going to challenge. We sit at home and go, look at those stars and how beautiful they are. And those telescopes are really doing good over there. You know, I heard they had one that's so large it's going to have 8 stories dug in the ground, just the foundation of it. 8 stories, really? Yeah. And I heard that they were going to. Now, let me qualify this. This is me just repeating what I'm hearing, the nonsense of sense of the things that I've been hearing out there from the non-native people that are struggling to understand why people would be protesting this. So, but to carry on, I also heard that it was going to be nuclear, powered by nuclear. Do you know how it's going to be powered? Well, man, that'd be a major undertaking if they put a nuclear reactor up there to drive this 30-millimeter telescope, you know. And I'm thinking, damn, are you that lazy or disenfranchised that you would witness or hear and not follow up on the fact that, or be excited or concerned that at 13,000 feet they're going to put a nuclear reactor above your head, above and radiating? And what if they go wrong? What if it breaks? What if the volcano occurs? What if all of those things? And where is the wastewater going to go, or the cooling water that's going to go? I don't know the technology, but from a layman's standpoint, I'm just saying, I know there's a coolant unless they have a new reactor that they haven't published or what have you. But there's that layer of people, a strata of people, that while being ignorant and in digesting bad information, you're being critical of the people that are standing up and saying, well, no, you're encroaching. You're violating our rights, our constitutional rights under the Constitution, our civil rights, our native rights, all of those things. And some people proudly say, well, you know, they're just making this up. Well, I don't think they're just making it up. They say that there's contaminations and there's testing going on of chemicals and what have you. I just read you a document that where they, as small as it may be, it's outside of the purview of watching stars and meteors. So I think that if, in fact, they're going to put the 30-millimeter telescope, There's other rumors that, well, you know, they're already drilling. Well, part of their contract, part of their lease, part of their conditions of the lease is that they cannot impact, have any negative impact on or cause any negative impacts on the Waikau Pond, Waiau Lake, Lake Waiau. So if you're drilling, you must be looking for wells, or you're drilling to see where the water level of the table is. And if you are, if you're going to go eight stories, and I don't know that to be the facts or the truth, but if they are, according to rumors, people should be asking, how high is the water table up there? And if that's the highest point of the water table, how is that water going to be contaminated, and how will it migrate downstream and poison the people? Poison the environment. How? These are questions that are really not answered. And if you are going to, it's possible that you can tap in and break the, like we see out here along the coast here around Oahu, for example. Some of the aquifers are compromised. They've already punctured holes to them, the basal layer and what have you. And where there's saltwater intrusion due to the improper tapping of pilings and what have you, or the wrong use of pilings, or misreading of the geological tests that they ran. I don't know. But I, in this day and age, 2019, I'm moved. My support goes to, if there's anybody trying to protect anything as this snowball rolls down the hill, count me in. I'm part of that team. Because what I witnessed in reading the documents and the historical background of this handling of the TMT, it warrants every single soul that breathes clean air, clean water, or anything, or benefit from this earth should be involved and view anything that the state and the UH and its contractors and its lessees disseminate. Look at it with jaundiced eyes. Because anytime you can't talk to people and you employ cops and goon squads, just take a look at the old days in the labor where the goon squad, and the goon squads kill people. Because they didn't want to pick peaches for 1 cent a day, or 1 cent a bush, a bucket, a barrel, or whatever. Union busting. And DLNR is so asphyxiated on covering up this activity and advancing this bad science and establishing and giving these operators a foothold to operate illegally and unethically. They are hell-bent and willing to spend our money, and not only our money. What common sense have you missed about this when you take all of your soldiers and move them to another island, not all of them, but you have a skeleton crew here? So, and they would add now, they'll tell you, well, Carol Cox doesn't know what he's talking about. So I'm going to propose this. If you only have 20 soldiers or officers on this island, and you take eight of them or 10 of them and take them and send them to the big island, then you have some that are sick and some that are on ROPA that can't get out and patrol. There are two, three, or four, or five of them being on it. And so you have a skeleton crew. So why would Suzanne Case assign officers on the Big Island to protect the DLNR's interests and the UH's interests and harass the native people there? By being there is a harassment, in my opinion. And then leave your back door open over here and not protect or enhance the enforcement action, or deny enforcement rights on this island. You go figure, and you'll understand why I say that it is corrupt. And I applaud and I invite all of you to at least embrace or support. And you go online, go on Facebook and go for TMT. And I'm not saying suggest you become a radical, and I'm not a radical, but at some point you got to call a spade a spade. So thank you for joining me, and I hope you enjoy this new conversation with Lanakila, Joshua Lanakila Miguel. He's actually called Lanakila, but you should hear him chant too. One day we'll try and get him to do some chants. Aloha and thank you. Go to carolcox.com to look at some of the photos that we took over there in video. And we'll be posting on YouTube at Cox 7826627. Cox 7826627. The whole interview with Lanakila. Aloha. Thank you.
The majority of our own people, of our own species, is sleeping to our march toward extinction. That's one of the biggest, scariest things. Why? Because we are all pretty much indoctrinated into a concept that doesn't understand that we are reliant on China. Economies is not the foundation of life. Economy is not the foundation of life. Water cycles are the foundation of life. Ecosystem, from the mountain all the way down to the depths of the sea, are the foundation of life. Economy is not the foundation of life. But we have sacrificed everything for economy. For me, that's why I'm in this movement. That's what sparked me to fly. Right. Oh, the mountain. Whatever. Felt like I was flying. I don't remember it. Ask me to run now. I don't know. But because literally, for my generation and the generations under us, we right now. Can any of you guys promise our kids that they'll be able to breathe clean air in 20 years? We cannot even promise that. Can we promise our kids in 20 years they'll be able to have fish in the ocean? We cannot promise them that. Because we're too concerned with paying bills. We're too concerned with getting the next, you know, high fashion product. Because we have been indoctrinated into that thought. We, even as Kanaka Maori, will stand up and we will fight. But when I gotta clock out, I gotta go back wherever. It's a sad reality. I'm not saying this. Yeah, I'm right now trying to figure it out myself. I'm supposed to start working. I'm trying to figure it out. But it's a reality. Mauna Wakea, this stand right now. I've spoken many a time that Mauna Kea is a microcosm. You can take a little more close. What we are dealing with is the summit of the Mauna. It is a microcosm of what's happening on the planetary, on the whole planet right now. We only have so much. The Western world has marched us into a conceptual way of thinking that we can continue on a linear scale. We're on a finite planet. You cannot operate a linear system on a finite planet. Bring that right here onto our island. How many guys heard the phrase? Heba'a, heboku, heboku, heba'a. The canoe is an island. The island is a canoe. That very same concept. So when you're on a ba'a and you set sail for Kaiki, yeah, you hope you make it in 30 days. But you only get so much bai, you only get so much food, you only get so much kanaka to do whatever it is you got to make it. So you need to be very, very conservative. You have to make sure everyone is taken care of, because everybody is pushing on the ba'a. The ba'a itself has to be taken care of. I've taken it to a point, we got to expand that olelono eau. He ba'a, he honua, he honua, he ba'a. The canoe is the planet. This planet is the canoe. Pele Huanua Mea and the Pele clan, they come to Hawaii on this great canoe. What's the name of the canoe? Honuaiakea. The great expansive earth. That is the name of the Baha that brings the fire god to Hawaii. It is a name for this planet. Where this great canoe flows into the Moananui that is the universe. But we're operating as if everything is just, you know, endless. Our kupuna knew that. That's not true. That's why we had some strict kapu, yeah? Go ahead, go catch the wrong fish, wrong time of the year. See what happens. Now, from a boy, how they experience everything. Oh my God, they kill you over a fish? Hawaiian thought. What makes you any better than a fish?
Right.
That especially when that kapu is set. When do we normally have that fish on the kapu? During their mating season, so they can reproduce. So, that fish is because we need to
malama
that
ia,
because the life cycle of that ia is not is going to be able to make more. And in this process of creating more, it's not just to feed us more. Yeah. How many eggs would fish lay? Chocolate. Some of those eggs will be eaten by other things. Some of those eggs will get a little bigger to eat the other things. Some of those eggs will go into fish that can help us eat other things. It's all part of a whole cycle. And our kupuna knew this. So when they saw that, somebody who was so rakai, so greedy, can catch the fish and said, I don't care, I want it now. The punch was intense. The punch was intense because what are they truly trying to kill? What was the actual thing our kupuna was trying to bring?
The spirit of greed.
Greed. That is what our kupuna was trying to get. They would not allow that greed factor to overtake the needs of Malama Aina. There's a, we think of that Manao. Now, I have my hypothesis. How did we get to that point? How did our companies become so strict about natural resources? I get my hypothesis. My hypothesis is they would learn the hard way. I think our kupuna would learn the hard way. You know, we're not perfect. You know, we have fossil evidence of giants like this moose, yeah, in Hawaii. A boa. And some of these fossils have been found in the mountains here. I heard on Kauai. But these are like 6-7 foot tall, like goose birds. And I think the last fossil evidence says they died out about 900 to 1,000 years ago. That's totally within our time frame of our kupuna. I don't know, as my hypothesis, that we might have hunted them to extinction. And I think our kupuna would learn from that. And the fool on it, oh my God, we actually wiped that out. We can never allow that to happen again. No one human life is more important than Malama in the rest of other life. That's why you can harvest one poa tree from the mountains. What did it take? A human mohai. It took human sacrifice. So he was chopping down the forest at will. No. Mahalo when the tree fall down on its own. Mahalo when the big driftwood come in. Because to come into the Kuahidi, to take the life of one of the great giants of the mountain, that is not a small thing. So for me, I'm not saying we're going to return to that.
No.
But to take the mana'o, the thought of that, of how important it is to Malama, the Aina, our kupuna, and stop looking at our kupuna as natural resources. We have to look at them as all of our mo'okuahau from a kumulipu and everything establishes as ohana and as kupuna. How do we go into the aina and be able to gather these things? First thing you gotta do what then? You better give back. For me, if you're a fisherman and you don't feed the ocean, stop fishing. If you're a hunter and you don't go malama the forest, stop hunting. But you know what? Cannot. Because we need you to malama the forest. We need our fishermen malama in the ocean. That little girl who just came in haunting me before she left, from Miloli'i. What is Miloli'i most famous for?
Fishing.
Not just the fishing.
The traditional fishing.
Of doing what?
Night.
Of feeding the fish. Above all things, that is what Miloli'i is the strongest blessing, is that they still continue to go out and see the fish. Some people, they, or both everybody, is forgotten that part. They will go out there just to see fish. They don't go and go fishing every single time. One kupuna taught me, you know, what's the sacred number in Hawaii? Eha.
Five.
Yeah. Eha. Four. Hawaii, yeah. Well, we don't count with our fingers. We count with the gaps in between.
Ah.
Our traditional number system is based on a count of four. Why? You put the fishtail over here or a collar, whatever, you count everything by four. One kupuna taught me. You give, you give, you give, you take. You give, you give, you give, you take. That way you're always stocking. You're always making sure the resource is plentiful. Nowadays, we ask backwards. We're taking, we're taking, we're taking, and maybe we might hear. In most cases, now we just take, 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 take. What are we giving back? Our pollution. I get heated about this because, you know, the institutions that they educated, why are they not pushing this stuff? Why are we not creating industry or creating jobs based on this? For me, getting out there and malamaing the co-op, the fishing co-op, making sure that the forest, that the maile and the forest, all that is malamad, that's what these DLNR officers should be doing right now. And we should only have, we only get like 20 officers. We should have hundreds of them. On, in every single community, not Lino gonna drive to Hilo, comes to Hoju. In each community, the people of that community need to be the core, need to be the officers, need to be the protectors of that community. Kauai. Is it Kauai or ano yan? Up the kind. Way down. What's the end of the road down there?
Somahali or K.A.?
K.A. side. Isn't there a project that they've done with the community?
Yeah.
I'm just hearing about it.
Yeah.
Someone else can probably speak better to it. But I heard that's a project that they kind of had to kue to get, but they got kind of this better relationship with the community is becoming the stewards of the coastline and everything, and they have more say. They should just be given all the say, but it's a step.
Yeah.
So, that's the kind of things we start thinking. For me, in this movement, I have to stop and acknowledge a couple things. What's some of the biggest arguments they give us in the stance for TMT?
The damage is already done.
That's one.
Benefit to humanity.
Jobs.
Job.
You ask most of any of our local people that support TMT, it's mostly that. Jobs will bring income. Why? Because the settlers over here, the settler system has kept us so impoverished that they can just any kind of crumbs they throw off, we're fighting for. Well, it shouldn't be that. So, for me, I acknowledge that. Okay, yes, we are stopping some local jobs. I admit, yes, we are. When we had a meeting with Governor Ige just the other week, last week, I have no idea what the day is. Whatever the hell I had with him. You know, we asked him straight up, what is your biggest concern? Why are you so invested in this? What's the biggest thing? One, they don't like TMT to the state. Two, and probably the biggest thing, is the business organization here, or the business community, is on him because they're convinced, as they've been saying, that if we don't get this TMT pushed through and building and built, it's going to be bad publicity for business in Hawaii. They are convinced that if this project doesn't go through, we are going to dry up like a prune because no businesses will come to Hawaii. I said, hell yeah! Hawaii will be a bad place for bad businesses. So any more bad businesses that think they're going to come in here, push our people around, destroy our natural ecosystem, we will run your boss out of here. Yes, Hawaii will be a bad place for bad business.
Mm-hmm.
You should have started that 100 years ago.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, with that, let's look ahead. As we're standing guard here, we all must look ahead. How then do we malama those families who are depending on the income from this job? What other industries can we create here and now that sits in our values as Kanaka most. You heard Kalikoa's presentation earlier. Kumulipo, all these different mo'okua, how all these different genealogical chants, all of it establishes our kihina to aina. Yeah? The whole concept is, for me, indigenous people, native peoples of the land, is when we live in a point and in a way that you are part of your land. For me, I don't care how much kupo you get. Hawaii is that you live Hawaii. Japan, you have plenty of koko, but you know, they don't live nothing Hawaii. Japan, you have no koko, but they live very Hawaii. So I don't really care about koko. I'm one that says that straight up. Unless you're going to use that koko thing to do actually something bono for Hawaii, what's the point? Because every single kanaka, every single human is indigenous, native to this planet. If I ask you what your ethnicity is, your answer is a land base. We all come from a point in time where our kupuna lives so intimately with the natural environment, with our aina, that our own name for who we are was the name of the land. What else am I? I'm Irish, I'm Scottish, and Filipino. My aina, my identity are those land bases. Because all of those people, all of those kupuna lived in a time and a way that they were pili with that aina. They were part of the natural ecosystem. Where the hell did we get separated when we talk about nature? We always talk about nature as if it's over there,
right,
and we're over here.
Right.
Where did that alien concept come from? Where we removed ourselves in the calculation of natural environment.
Religion, yeah.
It started with the religion. You know, a religion that put us up on high, seeing us as above everything else and separate them. That's our biggest problem. No matter what big city you live in, far away, rather than New York City in the middle of concrete jungle, it is still the trees and the mountains that's giving you your breath. It is still the clouds moving that's going to give you your water. It is still the plankton in the ocean that's giving you your heart, that's bringing, you know, fish to your door. No matter how far away you think you're getting from nature, you are still completely reliant upon it. That is an inseparable spot to the kanaka, to the mountain. So, back to it. Ola ka aina, ola ke kanaka. One of the biggest problems I see with TMT, and not just with TMT, but with many other situations that we're dealing with Hawaii, is we too easily spot off. Again, because they've kept us very oppressed and in a state of low income and everything. So whenever little crumbs are thrown off, our people are struggling. Yeah? So we will end up having to do the thing that's conflicting even in our own hearts and our own spirit. Yeah? Officers will come here and arrest their own grandparents because I gotta pay my bills. You know what that is? That's slavery. That is straight up slavery without change. Debt is slavery. And we have been conformed into it. Understand that process has only been around in Hawaii for like barely 150 years. We existed thriving for thousands of years on these same islands before that. So for me, there is already a template out there. We don't have to recreate the wheel. But we need to stop waiting for somebody from outside to come and bring us what we're going to be able to survive on, what I'm going to pay my bills on, what I'm going to take care of my family on. Create it. We need to be the creators of these things. Huli kalima ilalo. When we say huli kalima ilalo, turn the hands downward. We're not only talking about farming. The depth and concept of that is quit begging. Quit waiting for them to give us something. Turn our hands down and do the work. Create the industry. Create that job. Create those things. Take charge. I'm sick of seeing foreigners move over here and then they make all the job industry and we all got to work under them. And then we try to help them out because they know something's wrong. Or they're doing something wrong, so we try to help them. Should just be us, the people who live here. Now, I reiterate back. Now, we can look at the puliana that our people have, and we can create from that. Kanakalawayaw, our fishermen, our fishing industry, you know how sad it is that most of all the fish served in Hawaii is not from Hawaii. And that's because our fisheries are dying. Our fish populations are tanking. Hamakua, we still fierce protecting our coastline. Mahalo, we get cliff facing. Because if not, we'll be wiped out. A lot of it has to do with because of the economics. People gotta go. If they gotta pick all the opihi, they will. Why? Because they get the bills for the house coming up. And that, again, should not be an excuse, but it's a reality. It is a reality. But we need to be forward-thinking. If not, we are the creators of our own demise. Now we can barely go down to our coastlines over here. It's full of hotels and everything. Who built the hotels? Our own people. Who built up the gate? Our own people. When are we going to recognize that we are part of this, we're enslaved? That's what, for me, this movement is saying. Enough. We don't need to have to just suck off the pit of any kind of another industry that comes up from the outside.
Woo!
We can build it from here. Look what magic we have already made. Yeah. Just from Lahui. Kukulu Kumuhana. I read back there. Kukulu Kumuhana. That was the name of those summer camps when I was a kid. But that mana'o, that concept, title for now. Kukulu Kumuhana. Kukulu. What is kukulu? To build upon, to become great and solid like a pillar. Kukulu. Kukulu Kumuhana. To come together as one to create, to complete a task. We want to see our nation rise? Right on. It ain't going to be nothing but the damn UN going to come down some magic hip-hop and oh, now you're free. You don't start with that. You guys, we're not even feeding ourselves. We don't want enough forests to sustain us. We don't want enough rivers to sustain us. It ain't going to change with a constitution. It starts with this, what we see happening right now. Collective thought to change. But, again, now, Ola Ka'aina, Ola Ke Kanaka. Okay, we got a few other chiefs walking here. King so-and-so, princess so-and-so, whatever. I'm like, I don't want to hear from you. My number one ali'i is the aina. He ali'i ka aina he kabu a ke kanaka. For the land is the chief. The people, we are the servant. We honor our ali'i, we malama the ali'i, and return the ali'i pizza. So, I have seen more action from all of you guys, more change for our whole Lahui in 2 weeks than I have for many of these other guys.
Yeah.
Own it. Own your power again. And when you all own your own, when we all own our own power, and we bring our powers together, that's how we're going to save Hawaii. So, forward thinking. I encourage everybody now. There's a number of different things where we can already look at industries or economics or things that we do to support our financial situation. But how can we fully these things so that they are not degrading our own aina? Okay? As an example, we get any ranchers? Where's the rancher Mohana? Not this group, okay. But, you know, I'm from Horaka, Hamakua side, and, you know, Paka Ranch, everything. And so here's a thought. To be able to look at industries through the mindset of our kupuna. Now I know, growing up Hamakua, Waimea, Paniolo heritage is a beautiful part of our history. It's also a very destructive part of our history. You see all this bullhead mountain? From the cattle, from the sheep. This was old forest. We love the beautiful rolling hills of Waimea. 150 years ago, you guys were all forest. It was all forest. One of the biggest things that took it out? Cattle. chopping down hundreds and hundreds of acres for fencing, all that kind of stuff. The precious hardwoods all getting... We did that. But that's okay. We got to learn from that. But there's things that we can do and change right now. So, I'm not a rancher. I grew up with ranchers. Sometimes I used to go help on the ranch and stuff. But now let's think about this. We know that that's a harmful industry, the way that it's being conducted right now. Yes? Yet, with all our grass-fed local beef, still almost 75% of all the beef sold in Hawaii comes from Texas. What's wrong with that?
We should fly away.
We gotta keep it here. But here's the manao. Now we have one small ranch in Ahualoa. And they're going into something called low-lying beef. Ever heard of it? Low-lying beef. So you know your typical Angus beef that you buy in a store and stuff? No, these are not natural cows. Not that that's GMO, but like they've been bred to get bigger and bigger and bigger by humans. We bred them, mixed so they get it so big. The concept being, the bigger the animal, the more meat it's going to produce. My sister works for the cattleman's industry, and a basic concept for them is one, you need at least 1 acre per Angus. Yeah? So average it out on the size of a different herd. Okay? Now, with low-lying beef, these are kind of getting older strains of cows, and they're kind of, they're cute, short, stocky little things. Yeah? You're like, give me this paw. Momona bugger. And typically what it is now, you can get 2.5 head of cattle per acre. Okay? Now, they're smaller animals, but once they dress out, it actually produces a higher yield of beef than the one big Angus. But you look at that, you know, you get so much momona on the stuff, and then because they're so big, the muscle structure is so much tougher, and that's a big belly. It's a big empty cavity that you're not getting any meat out of. So when you look at it, you can have 1 acre with one Angus, or 1 acre with 2.5 head of low-lying beef, that actually produces a higher yield, and actually a higher quality beef. My auntie and friends, you know, they mostly right now, they can only handle so much of like Merriman buys their meat. It's because it's prime, good quality. So imagine that concept. If we were able to work with our local ranchers to invest now, where now, instead of having to take care of 1,000 acres of pasture and only produce so much beef, they could actually cut their number of their acreage of pasture in half and produce even a higher yield of quality beef. What can we do with the other half of the pasture we got back? We put our forest back. Yeah. There's a level of intelligence there. Economically shabby too. Yeah. We can actually produce more. Yeah, at a higher yield, and we can help to malamar aina. It's a big thing for me to get the ungulates out of the mountains. We can have particular areas where we allow, where we have the goats and the muflan and all this kind of stuff. Now, that's one example of seeing different industries, but approaching things from a cultural perspective. Yeah? Now, here we go. It's a way that we're able to still malama our forest, cut down on the use of land, and be able to put nutrients back onto the aina. Okay? You guys, and we're not the only ones doing this right now. Look at, on the world scale, this is happening. I'm a huge proponent of hemp.
Huge.
Hemp is friggin' crazy. You guys learn about this plant? It's awesome. You can do everything with hemp.
That oil can do.
And you know what? Planting hemp restores your soil.
Yes.
We can restore our soil by planting this plant.
And unfortunately,
we didn't
have governors to veto a bill that
would
have opened it up.
Yes, we still have stupid government.
So that's the problem. Everything you're saying is so beautiful.
Our government steps.
I mean, look at what happened even there. How the government refused.
Right.
It's even nuts. I mean, in a way, we're lucky they're so ineffective because that's how we use the payload. But, you know, it's kind of by default, it's not by design.
Aye.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
So when that's the thing, the whole you see here what can be created just by the will of people, the good will of people, but then you take the good will and you put it out in over there in the state of Hawaii, which isn't even the state of the country of Hawaii. You know, they just bulldoze it.
Exactly. Our government is still run by
idiots. So what do we do? What do we do in the meantime?
What we do in the meantime is what we are doing right now. We do not allow the government to tell us that anymore. You realize for the past 2 weeks, you guys are all criminals, yeah? Even right now, Bill Ayala is demanding that we are arrested and removed from this place right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, I have my passport, so I'm ready to be arrested.
But this is the power of the people. And we cannot forget that when we leave the Mauna. That's the biggest thing. If we really want change, this is not a one-action situation. We need to start standing up and supporting our local industries. You know, we talk about that shop local. You guys have no idea how powerful that really is. The biggest voting power we have is with our money. Yeah? How we use our money, where we invest. Yeah? When we stand up against things, industries, construction projects or whatever that is not formal. This is not my jacket. That's what we have to do. Imagine if we had this mass go down to Huhonua right now. Big Island people, you know about Huhonua, right?
Yeah.
The horrible, horrible power plant project they're trying to do. Chopping down trees, burning the trees, using to cool their stuff, pumping water from our aquifer down, laced with chemicals, and they want to shoot it back down into the aquifer. That is happening right now. Our Ohana down, Papaiko, they're fighting that. We reach critical mass to be able to shut down bad industries, but then we need this critical mass to support good things that are coming. We need more solar power. If you guys want to watch TV, you want solar power. Okay, yes, I know we get issues with windmills here and there. But you need to admit, it's better than oil, right? So we need to now assist in how do we make that clean energy better. Stop just complaining and engage in the process to make better. We need to be active. Ola ka'aina. We need these things done in a way. It's all these different types. We don't need to be chopping down our mountains anymore to create cement. You know where you can make cement from? Hemp. I think you got to add a little bit, but it's better. You can make metal, steel, or something as hard as steel from hemp. You know what? You know, we don't think about it because we don't have it here. But you know all this stuff? This is some other native cousin's land getting destroyed right now. This is someone else's aina. Someone else's mauna being ripped apart right now. All this plastic, that is someone else's aina getting polluted for that oil. So, we got to recognize that our efforts to ho'opono our aina here is also effective in helping the rest of the honua. Ola ka'aina, ola ke kanaka. We need to start getting back to a point where we are demanding, and then we are also acting in our own demand, that we put the health and safety of our aina above even our own. That's what this movement is symbolic of right now. We are willing to put our lives on this road. Come on, man. We're willing to do that. To protect this mountain. People have been doing that all around the world. Studies are coming out right now. Environmentalists are one of the biggest targets right now. They say nearly 5 environmentalists are murdered every single week for their defense of forests, the defense of rivers. Why? Because the industries that are bringing us this is the ones killing us. We are not innocent. In me. But by God, we can change that. And we need to. Why? Our little ones. Our kids. Again, right now, as it stands, we cannot promise our children right now that they will be able to breathe clean air in 20 years. You cannot promise them that. We cannot promise them that they can go down to Waiai and go fishing. Because as I saw, hardly get any fish as of now. It is a reality check that all of us need to get back. And we got to strive. We got to, and it starts at home. I am not saying I'm going to. But having even that consciousness to shift, let's start creating the industries that will help to heal our planet. Yeah? See, I'm going to kind of start wrapping up with this. Back in 2015, during the first stand, I made a very interesting friend. His name's Henry Yang. Anybody know who that is? He's the chairman of the board of TMT.
Wow!
Okay. Let me tell you some backstory now. Okay. How many of you guys saw the groundbreaking video? So you saw when I was going back with Billy. You saw that when I was going back with the mayor. Had one little Japanese guy, a little Chinese guy, would come on his side. He tried to say something. And Billy would push him out of the way. A couple years later, that was Henry Yang. So a little history. I have a lot of respect for this man. I know it sounds weird. Hang on, wait a minute. Henry Yang, he is the chairman of Santa Barbara State University. He was brought on into the TMT project because of his connection in the education. Yeah? He's not a scientist, not an astronomer, but he was brought in to help with that component. In the midst when we are locked up on the mountain, I had a number of different meetings going back and forth in the long at the Capitol. You know that flat top you see? That, I didn't know. That's a big old lanai all around the Capitol. Meetings like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course, they tried to buy us off. Well, why don't we give you this? Well, you can give me that, but I'm not giving you that. But you can give us that. The biggest thing that caught this man here, because they were convinced, we need to make Hawaii the world leader in astronomical science. Like, why? They already say that they are. I said, you know what? As part of my own thing, I'm not against astronomy, but one of my things in this is why we're focusing so much on looking farther away from our problems. We're spending billions, and not even trillions of dollars a year, to look in the wrong direction. I love that famous shirt from Hawaiian Force. Before you look into space, you need to malama this way. Our own spaceship is breaking apart here, and they're not even paying attention. So, I thought, Henry, I was like, you know, what if we shifted the focus of the University of Hawaii? Yeah? What if we focus on education that is actually more beneficial for this planet? What if we shifted the goal instead of going into astronomy being the lead thing for the University of Hawaii? What if we focus on Hawaii becoming the world leader in earth-saving technology? Earth-saving science. He was hooked on that. He came back to Hawaii 3 times just to discuss that. So even guys on the other side of this particular situation, I always say we have to always look at them with that's what Kapu Aloha does. It opens up dialogue. Mike McCartney, Chief of Staff, he was here the other day. He was Chief of Staff for Governor Egan. As soon as I saw him the other day, he goes, University of First Aid Technology. I was a fool. He's like, I'm on that. I still want to make that happen. That is us grabbing the narrative and creating our own future. Turning our hands downward, quit begging, quit waiting for Superman. And when we know who we are, where we are, and what we know needs to be done, let us create it. You got something good going in your community? You see something that needs to happen in your community? Come talk to your community. Here we are, here, right now. The Lahui is waking up. We need to demand from our current leaders that they need to wake up. That's what we're doing right now. You have no idea how powerful you are when you are conscious. When we are conscious as a Lahui, that is earth shit. Yeah. But also, remember this, something I remember sometimes Boys felt like when we do this kind of work, and sometimes we feel like we are alone. It's like, we over here trying for 5 minutes, and we get thousands of our ohana, and they're not here, and they're not even paying attention. We feel very alone. Right now, I don't feel alone. We're pretty good. But remember this too, we are also not alone on this planet. There are efforts. We need to, as Kanaka, as people who live in Hawaii, as people of this planet, we gotta join forces with all of the rest of our ohana that's also screaming out the same thing.
Yeah.
Right before I left Europe, there was an awesome movement in in Germany. You guys, 4,000 people ran. I think what's Canada doing? The oil?
Fracking.
Digging the pit.
Oil sand. Tar sand. Yeah.
There's also a tar sand thing in Germany. 5,000 people broke the fence and they ran in. Cops were just like... and they ran down into the pit. Stopping the machine. That's what we need now. Why? We don't do that now. They would suffer. Our kids would suffer. You think you're suffering now? We think we know more fish now. What about them? So that's why the time of idleness is done. One of the biggest movements that a lot of us got inspired, even way back in Mauna Kea, I Don't Know More. You guys ever heard of that movement? Started by 4 women in Canada. Activated people across Canada and spread throughout the Americas. And then we had I Don't Know More Hawaii. What does that mean? I Don't Know More. Quit sitting around. Quit pointing fingers and just blaming. Quit waiting. You can do it. That is the power of a united Lahu. Ola ka aina. Ola ki kanaka. When we put our wants on the side and we work towards the needs of our community, most times you're going to find that need will be serviced by caring back to the aina. Look at all the health things now. There's actually doctors now. We have a country it is. But they are actually, doctors are able to prescribe nature walks.
Austria.
They prescribe to people to go work Switzerland. In a garden. Yeah.
Switzerland, Austria.
Because there is so much, in that. You know, like the everyday life of our kukuna? There was so much in that. It was so bite. Now we're just working like rats on a wheel. They put that debt on us. Well, when are we going to stand up against it? Where are we going to say enough is enough? Because if we don't know, look to every child around you and tell them, I'm sorry, I never liked food. Remember that. You don't activate now, and that's me, as a teacher who taught from kindergarten, actually now I teach preschool to 12th grade. I don't necessarily have a child of my own. But I have thousands of kids. And I look at every single one of them all the time and I realize if I don't do something, it's my fault. I'm sorry. I never liked food. I was too content because I never liked to step out of my comfort. I didn't want to, you know, it was stressful. I had to go to work. And then who could pay for that later? Or Kamali. So, understand, we are on a bit of a... We're on the edge. That's the word. The precipice. We're on the precipice. We are losing species like that. Too cold. Okay? Animals that all of us grew up on, you guys may never see. Rhino, giraffe, elephant, polar bear. Bears. Whales. They might not see that. I was closing, right? I closed with this one. My final one. Rabbit.
going back to what I said earlier about those ding-dongs who say rivers flowing into the ocean is a waste of water. I come from Hamakua. Hamakua is famous for our rivers. Something like almost 500 rivers from Pupolu, Kohala, all the way to Hilo. Chuck River. Today, out of those rivers, only about 5 actually flow year-round. 5.
Diversion.
What is happening? Why is that critical? There's a mo'olelo and a story that goes back to Hawaii long ago. It speaks of the goddess of Poliahu. And when time went, the kanaka of Hamakua, I shared this story the other day if anyone needs to buy it. In a nutshell, there were old chief, he had gripes with the gods, he called off all ceremonies, and in that time, the land was dry. The rain stopped coming. Famine fell upon the people. What the people did? Namu, 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 namu. Complain, 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 complain. How come he's not doing that? How come the chief's not doing that? How come he's you know. And one day, eventually the old chief passed away, new chief comes, he said, let's see, reenact the ceremony. He calls in Kahuna, they do their thing. And nothing happens. The rain still do not come. Hamakua is ravished by drought. So finally, things gotten so bad, that's when now, some of our mo'olelo, even the highest prince cannot discern, they come to the oracle of Hawaii. Who is the oracle of Hawaii? Poliahu. The young virgin maiden meant to stay pure, held on the highest level. When they come to her, she discerns for them. Kaanenui Akea is her father. She declares, my father is your father. And therefore that kuleana to honor the father is all of ours. All of yours. He said, but the new chief has done ceremony. And she said, it's not just the chief, what about all the people? When the old chief was not doing his kuleana, how come the people never do anything? All they did was complain. So it's all your fault. One chief, all the people, why the people never do their own ceremony? Why they never conjure and call? In other words, don't just complain. Get active. If not, it's your fault. Own it. So the mo'olelo, they go back down, they share it to all the people of Hawakua. They conjure for ceremony, they make offerings, and the rains return. So in that they bear the great responsibility of people of Hawakua to help to maintain this relationship. We are the keepers of the base point of Pa'ohe. Yeah, then Ahukua, that extends from here, comes down from Honolulu area. Yeah, the regular trade wing comes in from that site. So it has important kuleana for Hamakua people to help to maintain that cycle. That water is raining, that's collecting. The forest that held that rain, you go back on the car, it's full of nothing. There's no forest. We get big rain now. Big rain, rivers, torrential. The next day, bone dry. We go back into drought in 2 weeks, no rain, because there's no forest. Pasture land is not holding water. Returning the forest to the upland, that's the watershed. That's the watershed. That's the sponge that helps to hold that water so it doesn't just wash off one time. It holds it, it collects it, and slowly releases it, helping to keep the rivers all flowing constantly. I had some people telling me they remember growing up in Honoka'a town, we get gulches right through town. They used to go down and get opai right in the gulches in Honoka'a. What? Like, I grew up in Honoka'a, those gulches barely flow twice a year now, unless you get big storms, and they had 1-2 days in town. And the fact that the o'opu would climb from the all the way up, all the way up there. What's wrong? But understand it's part of the engine too that also feeds the ocean. It is this water cycle, the river is flowing unobstructed from the Mauka, Surumakai, through the Nahele, through the forest, helping to gather all these nutrients and such and bringing it into the ocean.
That's what helps to activate. That is the Khan and the Kanaloa. The two primary gods to sustain life. That is where they meet. What is that one chant? Ola ya kane kane ke akua ola. Ola ya kanaloa ke akua kukue ue. The flowing of fresh waters of Khan. When they meet the waters of Kanaloa, that's the most abundant kupu, the most abundant sprouting. When you have the fresh and the salt mix, that's when you get the most limo. When you get the most limo, you get the most sea, you get the, you know, when you get the small fish, you get the bigger fish, you bring the bigger fish, and you know how it goes. So we have hundreds of rivers keeping that engine going all the time. Now we're down to five. Is our engine running at full capacity? No, it's not. But imagine, the Hamakua Coast, now look at that. We're on the north side. Yeah. Aranui Haha. The Aranui Haha channel between Hamakua, Hawaii Island and Maui is one of the strongest currents in the world. You get stuck in a bubble, you go out to Tahiti. And so that comes through, gets by the area of Koho'olawe and makes the Alaikaiki. That current will take you. So imagine the north side of our island, all these rivers pumping, helping to sprout, all of this plankton, all of these limo, all of these fish. The current pushes it in. It is Hamakua that feeds Kamaihai, that feeds Kona. All the nutrients from the forest lands of Hamakua coming through and it's blowing down. And then also pushing off into the Pacific. These islands help to feed the ocean with our water cycle continuing to flow. How do we help the fisheries expand? Get the forest back in the mountains. People don't normally think about that. We help to repopulate our ocean by planting trees in our mountains. That is a big part of the cycle. Now we can also go on the small scale. Hanakalawai'a, our fishermen, our ohanas who live along the shore, find a spot along the shore and go palu-palu that thing, please. Regularly. Go feed the fish. Okay, promise, this is my entity. Going back to the idea of being able to balance ourselves in the economic world. When it comes to our programs and everything right now, I know coming from a charter school growing up, we were always having to write letters to help them, to help protect our funding. We were always, and I've done so much work in nonprofits, it drives me freaking mad. Because we're always stuck in a process of having to hunt for money. We're always begging, writing somebody else, or trying to make an idea, beg for donations. That we spend so much time trying to get money to support our program, the program suffers. Look at even our schools and our hospitals and everything. They don't want to give them money. You know, one of the most intelligent things I heard, I don't know why we don't have boarding, but for me, it fits perfect with Hawaiian concept. You know what? When you look at like how we malamara po'a, fishermen go out, they feed that ko'a, they fed that same ko'a for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20, 100 generations. They never need fish finder, they caught a fish. Because they always went to that place, they always palu-palu, they cut in the side of the canoe, the fish here that they associate feeding time. They come to the ba'a. Our people train, and they actually, they shepherd the wild. Never need fish finder, just caught a fish. Don't believe me? Try walk by one koi pond. Fish is smart. You always return to that same spot. They will come. When the fish is all crazy, when they all go into feeding frenzy, go drop your hooks right into the middle of that thing. They're not associating the boat with friends disappearing. Yeah. They're too busy. They're like, oh, what's my quit? This is fine. Now they need to bring the boat, they run. Our people would go and feed. You know what that sounds like to me? We were masters of endowment fund. Oh, yeah, how endowment fund works? You get so much money, that's your principal. Special account. Okay. You need
be a principal, a special account sits there. You can, you know, do what you need. Try to build, but it builds interest. That every time you go palu palu, it builds interest. And as it continues to accumulate, keep it there, accumulates more and more. You come and you harvest off the top. You only touch the interest. You never break and touch your principal. So if the natural ecosystem provides this much, then you feel that it produces this much, and this is what you survive on. If it starts to dip down low, you stop. You allow it to replenish itself and begin to produce more of it. Nowadays, we're running the thing down. The fund is so low, it ain't generating no interest. And each generation that keeps coming up, or each new business introduced, keeps looking at everything like it's a full pot. Like it's a full cup. Oh, we'll get this much, it's a lot, we can take some more. Like, ah, no! It used to be, this whole mountain was forest. Now we get little pockets of forest. Oh, get plenty forest. You know, let's just take, we're just taking some. No! That sum is already a very little. Look at the summit of the mountain. The summit ecosystem is only this big. Everyone's like, but the mountain is huge. But that ecosystem is only this big. And they took some, and they took them all, and they took them all, took some more, 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 took some more. Irritating, yeah, that's like 13 times. What do they want?
14.
Some more. We are draining the principle. Now, Aina itself is segregated. So if we start thinking, putting the Aina, the health of Aina, like Kauka, Akikai, Kawai, Kamoana, we put that at the forefront of all of our plans, all of our economic ideas, the health of this Aina in front. You know what? This will, Hawaii will become a pivotal shift for the planet. The whole world. When we start taking control and cleaning our own oceans, when we start creating the own, our own jobs and industries that are not taken away from others, when we start seeing these intelligent technologies, yeah, and start applying these things to the health and regeneration of our own Aina, that's when we win. When we only claim our Hawaiian heritage to get more funding to live more Pu'ehaole style, we ain't helping nobody. When we claim that right only comes by being Hawaiian, which is acknowledging that we are descendants, we are the keiki, we are the hulihoa of the Aina. Malamara Aina, malama'at. The whole principle of haloa. Haloa na kalau kapalili. The first child born of Wake and Ho'okalani, who was the Mohai. His death became the reincarnation that became the kalo, the sustenance for the people. Haloa kinanaka, the beginning of our species, the relationship thing. What's that word? What's that word? Not reciprocal. Reciprocal. Symbiotic relationship. Imagine if we based our society on symbiotic relationship with our environment. It ain't a big, it's not like a big brand new thing. Our kupuna did it for thousands of years. So, for me, in this den, I am so proud to see our kanaka, to see the lahui, and see everybody joining the world global fight to protect even the smallest life forms, to protect the most fragile places. But like I talk about the kapu aloha, that you can take that home with you too, continue this battle, even off of this mountain. Continue to support each other, even off of this mountain. Let's start thinking ahead, and we grab and we create our future. That is dealing with who we are as a people. Do not allow the outside world to warp us to fit their idea of progress. What the Western world calls progress, I call crazy. We are marching to our doom. Right here is the front line for Hawaii saying, hell no, we won't go. We're going to bully this bugger right now. Hola ka aina.
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 In that order. Mahalo ya opo abang.
Mahalo. Mahalo.